Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. This is Theology Thursday. Typically, we look at the news of the day from a Christian worldview. Today, we look at the source of the Christian worldview, God's Word. Tonight, we're going to look at Nehemiah chapter 2. Well, if we ever get around to it. Nehemiah concluded chapter 1 dramatically, stating at the end of verse 11, "For I was the king's cupbearer." And we talked about what a prestigious position that was. And we asked, how did a Jew rise to such a position of access and honor being a cupbearer in the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians? Well, we can answer that question for Joseph in Egypt. How did he rise to the position he did? We know that story. And Daniel in Babylon. But how about Nehemiah in Persia? How did he get to this place? What events caused him to rise to this level? The Bible seemingly does not answer that question. But I think that's because we are so far removed historically that things that were common knowledge to the first readers of this book are so remote to us, and they're extraordinary that we have to dig more and read a little bit between the lines. We've got to be a little bit intuitive. Now remember that this is one of the most significant kings of the Old Testament because it was his command to rebuild Jerusalem that dates the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. It predicted, when we look at a prophecy in Daniel, that 483 years after this king gave the command to rebuild Jerusalem, that's when the Messiah would be cut off, would be killed. In fact, let's skip ahead in Nehemiah 2 and quote some excerpts beginning at verse 5. Nehemiah said, "If it pleases the king," and then the end of the verse, "I ask that you send me to Judah, that I may rebuild it." So Nehemiah the cupbearer asked this of the great and mighty king. "And then the king said to me," the queen also sitting beside him. Huh, the queen. It would have been nice to name the queen. For example, the book of Esther names the queen. It was Queen Vashti who the king Ahasuerus was so angry at because she publicly disobeyed him and humiliated him, so he got rid of her and got a new queen. So we got the name of that queen, Vashti. So what's the name of this queen? But it just says here, the queen, in verse 6, "So it pleased the king to send me." So this Nehemiah, the cupbearer, asked the king for permission to rebuild Jerusalem. And as we read the rest of the story, we'll see that this king, Artaxerxes, gave Nehemiah orders regarding his safe travel back to Jerusalem, his mission to rebuild the city. He provided for the supplies that he would require. Now, when did all this happen? Well, look at verse 1 of chapter 2. "And it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, that I took the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had never been sad in his presence before." Okay, let's turn to Daniel chapter 9 for the famous prophecy that predicted the date of the crucifixion of Christ. Daniel chapter 9, verse 24. And we'll look at maybe just parts of a couple verses here. We're not going to do a thorough study of Daniel's 70-week prophecy.
As Gordon Carroll could tell you, that's a major undertaking in and of itself. And so we're not going to get into that now. Someday, Lord willing, we'll study the book of Daniel, and then we'll look at that prophecy in detail. But right now, just briefly. Now, Daniel, how does he fit into the story of the Old Testament and these books of Ezra and Nehemiah, the rebuilding of the wall and then the rebuilding of the temple? Well, remember that Israel split in a civil war to the north and the south, to Israel in the north and Judah in the south, and the Assyrian Empire carried away the northern 10 tribes to Nineveh and Assyria, and they were, for the most part, lost to history, never to return. And 100 and some years later, then the southern kings and the southern part of the country, Judah, which was made up of the tribes of Judah and Benjamin, they were carried off to Babylon. And it was the beginning of what Jeremiah predicted of a 70-year period of the Babylonian captivity. 20 years after King Nebuchadnezzar carried them off, he gave the command to destroy the city of Jerusalem, destroy its walls, its gates, destroy the temple that Solomon had built. And so all that happened, that was in the Babylonian captivity. And Daniel, his ministry is about a 70-year ministry, which coincides with the Babylonian captivity. And in Daniel chapter 1, we read that Daniel and his three friends, remember those guys, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, that those were among the princes and the wise men that were carried off to Babylon. But Nebuchadnezzar wanted the wisest of the men to be brought to the palace so they can be taught the Persian language and the literature of the Persians, and so that they could be turned into wise men or counselors for the king. Why not take the best of every people he conquers and try to benefit from them? So that's what he did, and that's how Daniel ended up in circumstances where he could have the king's ear. In the book of Daniel, a 7-year period is described with the word week, W-E-E-K. To us, a week is 7 days. Well, the Bible, yes, a week could be 7 days, and sometimes it's referred to as a week of days to make it clear it's speaking of days, and other times a week could be a week of years, a 7-year period. And in the book of Daniel, it definitely uses a week to be a week of years. In fact, half a week could be called 42 months, which is 3.5 years, or 1,280 days. You know, the number of days in 3.5 years. So in Daniel chapter 9, his famous 70-week prophecy, it's 70 weeks of years, which would be 490 years. Now, remember when Jacob had to serve Laban to marry Rachel, and it says he had to serve him for 7 years, and then he ended up accidentally marrying the wrong woman, and he said, I got ripped off. I really wanted Rachel. And Laban said, okay, fulfill her week also. Work another 7 years week. Fulfill her week. So it's common that 7 years is called a week in Hebrew idiom. And that's the way it is in this chapter 9. In fact, chapter 10, verse 2, Daniel says that he was grieving for 3 weeks. And in the English, it only says 3 weeks. But Daniel's written in Hebrew and Aramaic. And in the original Hebrew, it says 3 weeks of days. When the translators translate into English, they drop the 3 weeks of days because it doesn't seem necessary in English, because weeks for us is almost always days. But at any rate, that shows that Daniel felt he had to distinguish. Here we have weeks of days. I didn't mourn for 21 years. I mourned for 21 days. But in the previous paragraph, the 70 weeks are 77-year periods. So Daniel chapter 9, verse 24, 70 weeks are determined for your people. Now that 70 weeks, 70 times 7 years is 490 years. And what we have here in this verse is God's to-do list. God wanted to accomplish these things in a 490-year period. 490 years are determined for your people, Israel, and for your holy city, Jerusalem, to finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. So we could tell that for the most part, this is regarding the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, the provision of salvation. And I think it goes further to also talk about the time of Jacob's trouble, the last 7 year period of tribulation that Israel was expecting, that Christ prophesied of, but that is right now still future. So 490 years were prophesied for these things, for God to fulfill his to-do list. Well, when would that 490 year period begin? Well, the next verse anchors the beginning of this prophecy in history. Verse 25, "Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the command to restore and build Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again and the wall, even in troublesome times. And after the 62 weeks, Messiah shall be cut off, but not for himself." So Nehemiah did rebuild the wall. He rebuilt the city, especially the wall. And yes, it was in troubling times. In fact, during the captivity. And then Christ was crucified, apparently 483 years exactly to the month after the command was given by Artaxerxes to rebuild Jerusalem. But what a weird way to say 483 years. Why not, if he's got to say it in the weeks, why not just 69 weeks? Why 7 weeks and 62 weeks? Why break it up like that? Well, I think that God's plan was that the ministry of Nehemiah and Ezra, the rebuilding of the city and the wall and the temple, that would be complete within 7 weeks or 49 years from the command to rebuild Jerusalem. It wouldn't all happen at once. It would take a period of time, and within that 7 week period, then the wall, the city, and the temple would be rebuilt. Remember that after they rebuilt the wall of Jerusalem, we saw that their houses were not yet built. And then they built the houses. We saw this in Nehemiah 7. The wall was done, but not yet the houses. That's when we looked ahead. And then the houses were built, but not yet the temple. We saw that in Haggai chapter 1. And in fact, a good amount of time passed before they were rebuked by the prophet Haggai into finishing the job and building the new temple. Now let's go back to Nehemiah chapter 2. In fact, if you're still there, Nehemiah chapter 2, it talks about this king Artaxerxes. Who is this king? We'll discuss that. And who is his unnamed queen? And why did Nehemiah bother to point out that she was sitting next to the king? If you introduce a character in a story, well, let the character do something. There must be some reason a character is introduced, either the fact that they're doing something or just the notoriety or how notable the person is, that this person was there as part of the scene. Now let's read, "And it came to pass in the month of Nisan." First off, notice the calendar month. Remember chapter 1, verse 1 of Nehemiah said it was the month of, well, the equivalent of our month of December. And the month of Nisan is the Passover. It's when we celebrate the resurrection. It's in the spring. It's 4 months later. And many commentators like to point out the delay. It was 4 months 4 months have passed since Nehemiah spoke to one of his countrymen, Hanani, about the condition of Jerusalem. And commentators like to ponder the reason. Why did so much time pass before Nehemiah made his request? Well, for one, Artaxerxes' queen may not have always sat with him on every occasion. And maybe, perhaps this was a special occasion when his queen, he had a special palace for women, and he had a harem that was probably huge even compared to Solomon's. But this queen was his primary queen. But how often would she sit with him, next to him? We don't know that for sure. And this is a bit conjecture, but I think we'll see that this queen was the reason why the king was favorably disposed toward the Jews and toward Nehemiah. But the primary reason for the delay was that this command to rebuild Jerusalem was not supposed to be issued in December. That would be the wrong month. That happened to be the time when Nehemiah got so worked up because visitors came from Jerusalem and told him how the city, their capital city, was desolate. But December was the wrong month to issue this command. Why? Because from the time of the command until the Messiah was to be cut off would be exactly 483 years. So it'd be nice if God is pointing that out. Let it be exactly 483 years, not 482 and a half, not 483 and a half, but 483, right on the button. So January would have been the wrong month, and February and March, but the right month was the Jewish month of Abib. That's the month of the Passover, when God said, this month of Abib is your first month of the year, and on the 14th day of the month, that's your Passover, when you celebrate that God has delivered you by the mighty power of God, delivered you out of bondage, the whole nation of Israel. Well, when they entered back into bondage, when the Babylonians carried them off, they sort of forgot what was the first month of the year. They switched to the Babylonian calendar. They no longer used Jewish names of the month. Instead of Abib, it's now Nisan. Well, Nisan's a Babylonian, the name of that month in the Babylonian language, the Chaldeans. But as we pick up the culture of the people we live with, the Jews resisted that, but not as effectively as perhaps they would have liked. And so it's now the month of Nisan, the very month 483 years later in which the Messiah would be crucified. During the feast of the Passover, when the whole nation, every family, is slaughtering a Passover lamb to symbolize that by the shedding of the blood, death would pass over them, Christ was being offered up for the whole nation, the true Passover lamb. And I would surmise that it wasn't only 483 years later to the year and to the month, but probably to the very day. Probably. And of course, I wouldn't be dogmatic about this, but I will not be shocked when we get to heaven if Nehemiah says, oh, remember that command was issued? That was on the 14th of Nisan during the Passover. And that's why, at least to the month, that's why God wanted Nehemiah to wait 4 months until the time was right. So this verse 1, and it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought before him, that I took the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had never been sad in his presence before. This Nehemiah, being the king's cupbearer, he would have daily been before him. Throughout the previous 4 months, he would have been there every day. Why is it that 4 months after hearing the terrible news, that was the day that he was so sad? In fact, the next verse, let's read it. Therefore, the king said to me, why is your face sad, since you are not sick. This is nothing but sorrow of heart. Well, people who have a reason to be sad, what makes them especially sorrowful? Well, in America, what time of the year do people grieve the most? When is depression the most obvious? Christmas, the holidays. Why Christmas? Well, we all want good families where we're accepted and loved, strong families. And Christmas is such a reminder of the way things should be and the way things could be because God sent His Son, Jesus Christ. So at the time of the year when the celebration should be greatest, that's when your despair is the deepest. And it's so hard for people to hide their sorrow during the holidays. And so for the Jew, what time of the year would that be? On the Passover, when God with His mighty hand delivered them out of bondage, that's when Nehemiah would be most destitute. Doing his job like he did every day for 4 months in front of the king, he could no longer hold back his emotion. He was just virtually distraught. God had delivered them for what? Because of their sin? For nothing. Because they were right back in bondage the way they had been before the Exodus. Now, it's interesting that the first verse of Nehemiah chapter 1 calls attention to the importance of it being the 20th year. Remember we talked about that? It said it was the 20th year, and it goes on, but it doesn't say the 20th year of what? That's very unusual. We pointed out in the last class that was to emphasize the importance of the 20th year of what? So you keep reading the book and you find out, oh yeah, the 20th year of Artaxerxes. And that is one of the most important dates in the Old Testament because from that date, 483 years later, the Messiah is crucified. And I think the same thing happens in the first verse of the first chapter to the first verse of the second chapter. It points out that it's what, Chislu was the month of the year in the first verse of chapter 1. Well, okay, that's the month, so what? Well, that's the month it happened, okay. And then the second chapter begins, well, it's the month of Nisan. Well, so what? Well, it brings your attention to 4 months past. Why did that much time elapse? Why does the author, Nehemiah, bother to point out these things? Either there's no real purpose to it, or it's just incidental details to help flesh out the story, or it's drawing our attention to the main purpose of the story being recorded and documented historically, chronologically. Now let's read more of verse 1 here. It came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes. Now what year would that have been? Well, there's some debate. And the debate ranges from 445 B.C., to 454 B.C. That's a range of 9 years. To fall exactly 483 years before the crucifixion, it would have had to been 454 B.C. Well, was it? Was it off? How certain can we be? When we discuss ancient history, unfortunately, we don't have as much concrete information as we would like. But we've got a lot. And we also have to deal with a strong bias among modern historians against the Bible. If you recall, I think this group knows well, that modern scholars will reject things in the Bible. For example, in the 1800s, they said there was no such thing as the Hittite Empire. No such people as the Hittites. What other group did they say was non-existent? Anybody want to shout out? The Assyrians. The Assyrians never existed. Nineveh, that great city, never existed. It was all made up. Well, for centuries, in fact, for over 2 millennia, all historians that discussed the matter believed that the Hittites existed and that the Assyrians existed as empires. So what evidence did the historians of the 1800s What evidence did they have that made them decide that all the historians before them were wrong? Anybody know what evidence they had? What new evidence surfaced? Anything? Nothing. Nothing at all. Not one shred of evidence. Why say that 2,000 years of historians were wrong and the Assyrians never existed? Well, the thing that changed is until that time, historians who dealt with these matters believed that the Bible, the Hebrew Scriptures, were among the best sources of information we had for the history of that time. You could hardly get a better source, more accurate source of information. But with Charles Darwin publishing his Origin of Species in 1859, in this extraordinary hatred and rebellion for God and the Bible, all of a sudden, if the Bible said it, it was false. That became the new bias, the new prejudice. So thankfully, that camp of skeptics were put to shame over the following decades when they would say there was no such thing as writing in the time of Moses. And sure enough, we found the Code of Hammurabi, and we found countless examples of writing from way back in the time of Moses. And they found the Hittite Empire and excavated their capital city and found the Assyrians and all their many cities and the huge complex of Nineveh. And how many clay tablets of the Assyrian Empire and kings and history have been uncovered and deciphered? Was it hundreds? Thousands? Over 100,000? We found their library in Nineveh. 100,000 tablets describing their history, and it fit in with the history of the Bible extremely well. As the Bible presented the Assyrian Empire, so it presented itself as ruthless and cruel and powerful. And in the midst of no evidence against the existence of Assyria, how irrational to say that the Jews would have invented an enemy who had constant military conquest and victory and eventually carried them all off into captivity. Why invent such a story to show that your whole nation, you're complete losers and you utterly failed? Who makes up that kind of stuff? Well, that's the flavor of realism that the Bible has from beginning to end. The people who wrote it wrote foremost about their own utter failure and sin. So when we look at the dates that we ascribe to ancient civilizations, we realize we can't be as accurate as, you know, when we're measuring the atomic weight of some element. There's information that we wish we have that we don't quite have. And there are complications. For example, there are titles that were thought to be proper names.